Today, this podcast is being recorded on Ngunnawal land. We pay our respects to the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and elders past and present. We extend our respect to any First Nations people joining us today. Welcome to The New Way, the bite-sized podcast for leaders and executives like you who want to transform their organisation and inspire people to work in new ways. Forget stalled progress and disappointment from upstairs. Each episode, I reveal how to communicate your vision, drive change, and become the leader that everyone loves. No BS or fluff, just the practical info that you need. I'm Dr. Kate Byrne. Get ready for actionable insights, mini execution plans, and game-changing secrets from my 20 years in the trenches, supporting senior leaders to introduce the new way. Let's get started. The most successful person in the room isn't the smartest person, it's the person with the most influence. And how to develop your own influence at work is the topic that I'm diving into with my guest today, consultant, speaker, and soon-to-be published author, Friska Wairia. In her consultancy, Fresh by Friska, she has worked with some of the biggest names in mining, engineering, and technology as a change and transformation expert for a decade. Her passion in driving change around the world has seen her influence people of all backgrounds and inspire the most conservative organizations to do things differently from the way that they've been done before. As you're about to discover, this was such a great conversation. Friska and I covered everything from the relationship between visibility and influence, how your personal brand can impact your influence at work, and how to develop your executive presence. Friska even shares some advice about how to connect with your senior executive sponsor. In fact, she even shared her take on some very hairy questions that I asked, like, you know, if you've only got 3 minutes with the sponsor, should you be pitching or should you be focusing on building the relationship first? What would you say to that? Listen to this episode. Towards the end, Frisk is going to share what she recommends, and it is gold. That noise was me doing a chef's kiss, but it's gold. This episode is full of useful aha moments and practical tips that you're going to be able to start putting into action immediately today. So I'm not going to keep it from you any longer. Let's dive in. Friska, hi. I am thrilled that we're chatting today. I've got so many questions for you.
Whoa, okay. Ominous. I'm ready.
No. In the best possible way, To begin with, I know that you have been in the change management space for quite a while now. And so I bet you have seen all kinds of things and all kinds of human behavior. I would love to know, this is such a left field way to start, but what is the craziest response to change that you have seen? Maybe, you know, like the biggest emotion or the craziest thing in your career? Is there something that has stood out for you?
Oh my God. So yes, I've been in change for a decade. And during that time, I've worked in, you know, mining, utilities, public safety, lots of different industries. It's always the seemingly small changes that causes people to go into a complete rage or a tiz. It was about car parking, believe it or not. So one of the many changes in this program was moving from car parks to individual carpooling and moving a particular government department from a really old CBD building to a brand new shiny building about 40 minutes away from the CBD. And so a lot of people were going to be losing car parking. I've had people probably this far from my face yelling full pelt that they were going to lose their car parking. It was like I'd taken their firstborn.
Oh my God. I have to say, I have had similar experiences about car parking. I think that somehow car parking for many organizations represents there's kind of a privileged position, you know, where you are in the chain of things, and people get very attached to their car parks. So how did you respond to that?
At the time, honestly, I was like a deer in the headlights. And it took me like a few seconds to kind of stop, not get emotional. The whole point is to take the sting out of it. Like, it's nothing personal. It's not about your performance. It's not about we don't value your position anymore, but it's simply a matter of space. And the whole point of moving to this new building is to benefit everybody. You know, it's going to be so much more spacious. You're going to have cutting edge technology. It's really for the benefit of the entire department, not just you. So I emphasize the collective benefits rather than focusing on the individual.
Very smart. Very smart approach. I think it's always fascinating to ask that question, you know, what's the craziest response that you've experienced? Because big emotions come up when change is happening. And quite often, there is some poor change manager who may be extremely qualified and very good at what they do, and very strategic, who can often find themselves on the front line of these really full-on responses. Yeah, it can be very confronting.
Totally, yeah. And never mind car parking. I'm sure you've been involved in many initiatives that are focused on cost-cutting, etc. The number of conversations I've overheard and people stopping work because they took biscuits away, you know, as a cost-cutting initiative, I can't even begin to count. It's definitely more than my two hands, you know, like that little seemingly small change, it hits people because it makes them think, what, you don't value me enough? Like, don't you want me to be comfortable? You know, I'm here 8 hours a day working hard for you, blah, blah, blah. And it was minuscule, like a $60,000 saving, cutting away biscuits, morning teas, etc. The lost productivity from people stopping work and having a banter about it was probably in the millions.
Yes, I have seen that kind of thing. Yeah, that's interesting that you raised it. I've never thought about that before, but you're right. Changes to communal spaces, office kitchens, that type of thing in terms of the supplies, I have seen significant responses to that. I've also seen really, really big responses to moving from having a dedicated desk to a more hot desking kind of arrangement. What am I going to do with my family photos? This is a picture of my child graduating. Where am I going to put that? And, you know, the impact of that. And you hit the nail on the head in terms of, don't you value me? You know, like, you're taking away my biscuits, my car park, my space to put my personal belongings. Yeah, it kind of really hits on the heart for people about the organization, the sense of being valued by that organization. It's interesting, isn't it? Those little things when we're putting together strategies of this very significant change often can be really the sticking points. Well, look, this is quite a good segue because I want to talk to you about influence. Something I have come across when I talk to change managers who are early career, mid-career, and even senior change leaders, something I hear that comes up quite often is people saying things like, you know, they can't get in the room. They wish they could connect with a leader or, you know, someone that they would like to influence, or they're trying to connect with stakeholders, but the stakeholders aren't really paying attention to them. And to me, that has to do with influence. And I'd love to know, is influence in your work with change management, is that a kind of a central part of it? What's your take on influence and change management?
You can't influence someone if you are having trouble connecting with them. Influence is very interesting because, you know, I'm a big believer in Dr. Robert Cialdini's work, and he talks about, you know, the similarity effect. He talks about reciprocity, etc. And I think what most people don't realize is that influence is not built overnight. So I remember one of the most challenging projects I was on, I really had to get this stakeholder on board. She was an admin person that had been there 3 decades or something, and everything went through her. She had informal influence, right? She didn't have the seniority. You know, she wasn't a CEO, she wasn't a GM, but everything had to go through her.
I understand. She was the head of the mafia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was the gatekeeper. And she was notoriously difficult. And I had to influence her to come on board. And, you know, she would always have, pardon my French, resting bitch face. And, you know, always going to the office, no smile, no hello, no nothing. And I was like, God damn, I need to, like, get this person on board. And so I started small. I just started with a simple smile every morning to her. Good morning, sir. How are you? Good morning. Good morning. Guess what? I got nothing back for probably 3 solid weeks. But did I give up? No. And then I started to see minor changes. She wouldn't smile back, but she'd be like, raise an eyebrow. The raised eyebrow turned into a little grin. The little grin turned into a smile. And 2 months later, 2 solid months of me saying hello to her, we finally started having coffee together. Like, that sort of influence you need to build. And, you know, people don't trust you or like you instantly. Some do, for sure. But if they're already resistant, you're not going to get that. And I think where most people fall over is that they give up too early, right? Just because I have a conversation today with a really resistant stakeholder doesn't mean they're going to be singing the praises of the change tomorrow. You know, that sort of commitment and acceptance takes time. You need to move them through that commitment curve. You do that by building up your influence and your likability with them.
Yes, I love that reminder that it takes time. There are a lot of reasons why people are in a hurry. It may be they're feeling, the change manager's feeling pressure from the project to deliver results or whatever it may be. But human relationships and connection, I love that word that you use, connection, takes time. And it sounds like you really persevered. You know, you were patient and focused on the little baby steps. Tell me more about influence. And so connection is part of it. I wonder about the relationship with, I guess I'm going to say, like, our personal brand at work and influence. Is there a relationship between those things?
I mean, definitely. I think the stronger your personal brand, the greater your influence. So I don't know how long you've had your business, Kate, but I haven't had mine very long, and I started at the worst time ever. 2 months before the pandemic hit, November 2019, I decided I wanted to forge a different path. I wanted more control over where, when, and how much I worked, even though before this, you already know I work a lot. And I thought, oh, I've always had such great feedback from peers, colleagues, managers. I want to consult independently. And no one knew me. Outside of the mining industry, no one knew me. And I realized the only thing standing in the way between where I was and where I wanted to be, which was partnering with, you know, big name clients on exciting projects, making a difference, making an impact, speaking, you know, workshops, etc., all around the world, invisibility was what was blocking me. And visibility creates credibility, and credibility creates influence. And so I started being very intentional with my personal brand and what I put out there in the world. Obviously, I chose LinkedIn as my platform because I'm B2B. And I started posting 60-second videos on change management when no one was doing it. And that's really what grew my following from like 4,000 to 20-something thousand to what it is today. And it's all about consistency and discipline and commitment, just like change. If you want to push through that resistance to adoption, it's a consistency and irregularity thing. Long story short, 6 weeks later, got my first client because they found me, found my videos on LinkedIn, and that was the University of Melbourne. And I haven't looked back. And since then, you know, I've had speaking gigs at Salesforce, at Google, at Microsoft. I've spoken at Women Leaders Institute summits in Singapore, Melbourne, and Sydney. And all that happened because I started putting myself out there. It is scary because you're going to be judged. But if you don't, you're going to be judged anyway. So you may as well take control of how the world perceives you.
Yes, that's wonderful advice. Thank you. If you are a change manager or change leader listening to this, I hope that inspires you to think about your visibility in the industry, in the market, across your network. I reckon there's going to be heaps of parallels in terms of building your visibility with your business and your expertise, as there are for people who may be in an organization or working on a particular change project and kind of building their visibility with key stakeholders as well. LinkedIn may or may not be the appropriate platform for that, but I'm sure that there are many transferable lessons there, and the strategy largely is transferable. I love what you said about the visibility is credibility is influence.
And Kate, like, you've hit the nail bang on the head. How I approached changing how others perceive me was exactly the same tools, strategies, and techniques that I use in a change management program in an organization. Like, let's start at the basics, right? ADKAR, awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, reinforcement. I literally applied those principles to my personal brand. First step was the awareness, which is the posting on LinkedIn. How do I get people to want to engage with me, to want to support me? What's going to get them to desire to hire me as a consultant? I really took the time to flesh out, you know, change management 101, stakeholder analysis. Who's who in the zoo? What are their fears? What are their motivations? What are their desires? And I literally stepped out that entire process and applied it to my personal brand.
Killing it. Guys, that is such good advice. Don't cheap out, you know, in terms of trying to engage with your stakeholders or have influence with your stakeholders too quickly. Really consider it. Be strategic in your approach. I would love to get your take. I'm going to ask you for some of the tips and some of the tricks that you use in your practice when you're supporting organizations through change. In terms of getting access and visibility to senior executives, I think a key part of it is your own personal executive presence. I think we're probably aligned in our thinking on that. You may call it something different, but I would love to know, do you have tips for people in terms of how they may be able to elevate their executive presence to create that credibility, that influence?
There's a few things. There's two parts, should I say. There's looking the part, and then there's speaking the part. I've invested a lot of time and a lot of money to level up my communication and my presenting skills. So if that's something you're in deficit of, I'd say get yourself some training. And there's nothing like practice, practice, practice. Like my TED Talk was one of the highest rated in the technology talks, and it's on TED.com. And people always say the same thing. It looks so natural. It looks so organic. Like, you know, you're just born with it.
Oh my God, Friska, I was just going to say the same thing. The way you move your hand, sorry to cut you off. We will link to it in the show notes. So it's really easy for people to see. It's a wonderful TED Talk, but the way you present it is perfection. You convey ideas, very big ideas, very clearly, just using some hand gestures, your facial expression. It is a masterclass, guys. I will link to it in the show notes so you can check it out. Please, I'm sorry to cut you off. Please keep talking about it.
Thank you, Kate. And I wanted to tell people that happened with effort. I didn't wake up and just go, hey, here's a TED Talk. I literally practiced 2 hours a day for 6 weeks straight. Literally. I would record myself. I'd listen to it as I went on my morning walks, when I'm buying groceries, when I'm on the train. People probably thought I was crazy talking to myself, practiced in front of a mirror, and that's why it's perfect, right? If you are not confident when you're about to speak, I'm sorry, it's because you haven't done the hard yards. If you've put in the effort, you're not going to be scared, you're not going to be nervous because you know you are solid.
Preparation, yes.
A lot of people do not put in the work.
So that's one part. I love that, using your voice and being able to speak as an executive in a professional kind of way with conviction, the energy that you bring to it. And you also mentioned, tell me more about the first thing you mentioned about looking the part.
Yeah, the looking the part. It doesn't take a lot of money, a lot of time or a lot of effort to look pulled together, to have a cohesive look. And at the end of the day, humans are visual creatures and first impressions are made in less than 4 seconds now. So you need to take the time to think about what impression you want to make, like what colors you wear, clothes, obviously, jewelry, understated makeup for women. So these little things all kind of form your whole image, and it does matter. So take the time to cultivate, to have a think about what are your values, what do you want people to kind of walk away with when they first encounter you, and then you can intentionally cultivate those values.
Ooh, I like that, kind of thinking about coming from a values first perspective in terms of how you present yourself and what your executive presence means and how you bring that to life.
And definitely don't underestimate eye contact, a strong handshake and a friendly smile.
Ooh, great tips.
And I also wanted to highlight that looking the part isn't just, you know, the things that you wear, but it's all your collateral, everything you produce needs to look the part, you know, from your slide decks, from your, you know, whatever it is that you're creating, it all needs to be consistent. Like the people that have the strongest brands, it's because their online presence and their offline presence is completely congruent, right? They don't look great on their website and then in person, they look like a hobo. Like it's because that is the same person, and that congruence really evokes a sense of confidence in the people that you interact with.
I love that insight that it flows through into your collateral and the material that you're creating. So any kind of communications that you might be producing or briefings that you're intending to deliver, everything is congruent. That is such a wonderful reminder for people. That's not something I think I've consciously thought about before, but that is such a wonderful way to be able to reflect on it. That's a wonderful cue to give people. There's something, now I'm going to get kind of down in the weeds, and I'd love to get your take on. If I am a change manager who finally kind of gets in front of a key influencer, a senior executive, perhaps the most senior sponsor of the change program, or the CEO, or whoever it is in my wildest dreams that I thought was out of reach, but I've got a couple of minutes maybe with them. And I'm kind of coming back to something you originally mentioned in terms of it takes time to build that relationship, build trust, build credibility. Given that I may not have very much time with this key stakeholder, should I kind of get in and pitch them straight away, or should I take the baby steps and hold off from the pitch and kind of try to make a human connection? What do you reckon?
I'd say read the room. So if they are, for example, on the way to present at a big board meeting, not the right time to ambush them. If they're simply waiting for their coffee order and it just looks like they're scrolling the weather on their phone or the news, sure, definitely. And always come prepared with interesting questions. No one likes to be asked, so what keeps you awake at night? What does success look like to you? Oh my God, like, don't be beige.
Yes, yeah.
Ask a boring question, you're going to get a boring answer and no one's going to remember you. So often I'll ask something like completely out of left field.
Please give us an example.
Like I'll ask something about, or I'll say, hey, how are you? And often the question is, you know, I'm great, how are you? And I'll be like, I just came off the crappiest flight ever, because this really happened, by the way, yesterday morning. The woman next to me literally was crying all the time. She just said that she popped 3 Valium. She was nervous when she was flying. I became her support person. Like, she held my hand so tight, and it was a red eye flight, and I barely like got a wink of sleep. And I'll be like, has that ever happened to you? What's been your worst flight experience? And that gets you talking. It lowers the defenses, you know, and then it just happens so naturally. So if you want to be remembered and be relatable, you have to be likable. And, you know, we've all had bad experiences. There's nothing like sharing that with somebody to break the ice. And then once you've lowered the defenses, then sure, talk business. Talk about, you know, whatever it is that you want to talk about.
That's wonderful. I love that tip of kind of disclosing, having a story and then kind of connecting on it. That's a wonderful way to do it. A great little formula for people to keep in their back pocket. Thank you so much. You've shared so many golden little tips and suggestions and advice for people that I know, well, I hope that people are inspired to put into practice today. Give it a go. See how it goes. How can people keep the conversation going and connect with you? You mentioned LinkedIn. Tell me all the places you would like people to connect with you.
Sure. So besides LinkedIn, I'm also on Instagram, instagram.com/freshbyfriska. My website is freshbyfriska.com. And those 60-second change management videos, tips and tricks, they're also on my TikTok, so by the same name. And next month, my book will be launching. So it's based on my TED Talk. It's called The Future Fit Organization, A Leader's Guide to Transformation. So I'll let the community know when that's available to purchase.
How exciting. Yes, I can't wait to check that out. Thank you so much for your time today. We will link to everything in the show notes, including your TED Talk, so people can give yourself the gift of 15 minutes to watch it. I know you'll really enjoy it. Thank you so much for your time today, Friska. This has been so much fun.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Kate.